He said he'd rather live standing than die kneeling. Now he's been shot dead by radical Muslim terrorists.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Wednesday, Worldview Wednesday, as we focus on what's happening in the world around us and some terribly tragic news from France. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, and a shout out to all of our new listeners on WARV 1590 AM in Providence and WBCI 105.9 FM in Portland, Providence, Rhode Island, Portland, Maine. Welcome to The Line of Fire, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society and chaos in a church, all too often in compromise. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In case you haven't heard this news, which is shocking and yet not shocking, in case you haven't heard the news, there is a magazine in France. It is a satire magazine. It regularly mocks Muhammad in Islam. It mocks ISIS. It mocks religion in general. It says that it wants, that editor has expressed in the past wanting to make Islam look as bad as Catholicism. So this is not some journal that I would applaud or some magazine that I would applaud. But certainly they have the right, free speech, to criticize, to mock religion if they want to. They can do that freely. It happens every day in America. Publications across America do that. And as followers of Jesus who see the Bible mocked, who see Jesus ridiculed, we are not going to the places of business and shooting people dead. But that is what happened. Radical Muslims stormed into the building and in cold blood murdered 12 people. I believe it was 4 journalists directly, and then others murdered in cold blood. It's on video. People heard shooters shouting, Allahu Akbar, and the prophet is avenged. And what I want you to grasp is this, just very, very simply. This was an expression of radical Islam. And France has seen various terror attacks in recent days. People had to be careful on the streets around Christmas time. There have been synagogue shootings and attacks on Jews, rabbis. There is increasing unrest among the younger Islamic population in France. Some major cities in France have 20-30% Muslim population. You might say, but this is a fringe. Number one, it's not as much of a fringe as you might think. Okay? That's number one. Number two, it doesn't matter. Let's say if you have, out of 10 Muslims, 7 decent people and 3 terrorists, all right? And then you have 100,000 Muslims in your country, that would be 30,000 terrorists. If you had 1 million Muslims in your country, that would be 300,000 terrorists. And the 700,000 are not going to stop the 300,000. We must recognize this for what it is, a radical expression of Islam with justification from Islamic literature and Islamic leadership. One of the editors had previously remarked that he would rather die standing than live kneeling. And I appreciate those sentiments, not what he was doing, but the sentiments. And France, Europe, the world needs to wake up now. Got some quotes to play for you, some clips to play for you, a whole lot of other news I want to talk about today on The Line of Fire. But I urge you, friends, wake up to reality. You've got a Muslim neighbor, probably a decent person. Reach out to them with the love of God. Share the gospel with them. Get involved in their lives as much as possible. But let's recognize radical Islam continues to grow and is a genuine expression of the Islamic faith.
fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I want you to hear a few quotes. It's the third one in particular that I want to get to, Howard Dean on Morning Joe. But let's play these first ones first. The president of France, clip number one, speaking about these attacks. Clip number one, president of France.
France today faced a shock, which is this is an assassinate and terrorist operation.
Yeah, of course they're shocked, but like I said, it's shocking, but it's not shocking. What do you think these people who believe what they believe and who believe that it is an absolute mortal sin to insult the prophet of Islam, what do you think they are going to do? Do you think that they are not of the same spirit, same mindset, same mentality of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and Boko Haram just because they live in France? Wasn't it Muslims raised in England who carried out the massive train attacks some years back in England? And that was part of the shock for the British that these were nice British kids raised in the country, yet they didn't appreciate their country. Remember the riots in France during Israel's war with Hamas? Who were they siding with? What were they saying? This is no surprise at all. David Cameron speaking in England before Parliament there. Clip number two.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the whole House will want to join me in condemning the barbaric attack this morning on an office of a magazine in Paris in which it's reported that 10 or more people may have been killed. While details are still unclear, I know that this House and this country stands united with the French people in our opposition to all forms of terrorism, and we stand squarely for free speech and democracy. And these people will never be able to take us off those values.
All right. And in England, a radical Muslim cleric who is always under government watch because of his radical statements and his support of murderous acts. Anjem Houdari, I see everything in print and then I don't hear names pronounced, so always my apologies if I'm mispronouncing a name. This is what he sent out Twitter using the hashtag Paris shooting. Freedom of expression does not extend to insulting the prophets of Allah, whatever your views on the events in Paris today. Freedom of expression means you can say what you want to say, and people may call you prejudiced or bigoted, and maybe you're worthy of being called prejudiced or bigoted. I would never say these kinds of things or provoke people to say defaming things about Muhammad just in a sensationalistic way. I'd explain where I differ with Islam and why I don't follow Muhammad as a prophet, and I'd be quite candid about that. But in some parts of the world, that means you die. So this is what Howard Dean has to say, and this is mind-bogglingly misguided, putting your head in the sand, not understanding Islam or aspects of Islam. Howard Dean, listen to what he had to say.
This is a chronic problem. I stopped calling these people Muslim terrorists. They're about as Muslim as I am. Yeah. I mean, they have no respect for anybody else's life. That's not what the Quran says. And, Europe has an enormous radical problem. And I think ISIS is a cult, not an Islamic cult. I think it's a cult.
Yeah.
And I think that, you got to deal with these people. The interesting thing here is we talked about guns the last time. In regarding the United States, regarding how guns get in the hands of the kind of people that killed the two police officers here 2 weeks ago, France has tremendous gun control laws, and yet these people are able to get Kalashnikovs. So, yeah. This is really complicated stuff, and I think you have to treat these people as basically mass murderers, but I do not think that we should accord them any particular religious respect, because I don't think, whatever they're claiming their motivation is, clearly is a twisted, cultish mind now.
Mr. Dean, wake up to reality. They are committed Muslims. They are committed Muslims. What they are doing has precedent in the Quran. What they are doing has precedent in Islamic tradition. Oh, yes, I know there are many other passages in the Quran and in Islamic tradition that would speak against this. I understand that. But they have precedent for this. Mr. Dean, have you ever read the Quran? Have you read the Quran in Arabic? Are you familiar with the hadith and the traditions about Muhammad? Are you familiar with the leading Muslim theologians, many of them around the world, who condone these kinds of things? Oh, there are many who condemn them, but there are others who condone them. To say it's not Islam would be like saying that Howard Dean's not a Democrat because his positions are too extreme. No, they represent a major part of the Democratic Party. Oh, boy. And are you saying that you cannot be part of a major religion and not have a cult-like mentality? You can be a religious Jew and have a cult-like mentality. You can be a religious Christian and have a cult-like mentality. And you better believe you can be a religious Muslim and have a cult-like mentality. Wake up, Europe. Wake up, America. Wake up, Howard Dean. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go any further, let me go to the phones and discuss some relevant issues. Brian in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Appreciate you taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to, I was talking to your the lady who answered the phone. I say, it always bothers me when you say radical Islam, radical Islam. That is not radical Islam, doctor. That is true Islam. They're emulating Muhammad. Muhammad was the perfect man. Everything, I mean, what they're doing with these killings and everything to infidels and whatnot, that's what Muhammad did. And, I'm sure there's Muslims who don't want to go around killing people, but like you said earlier, that the teachings of the Quran and the Surah and what's the other Hadith, I'm not an expert, but I've touched on a lot of these. They are being what they're supposed to be.
Why do you think I call it radical Islam? Knowing everything you just said, why do you think I call it radical Islam?
Well, I mean, when I hear you say that, to me it sounds like you're saying there's another side to Islam that isn't like this. And that's
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So, for example, no, it is. For example, when I had Dr. James White on my show, James has debated Muslim leaders between 70 and 80 times. When he was in South Africa, he was in the main part of the mosque, filled with hundreds of Muslims, debating Christianity versus Islam, the Bible versus the Quran, those kind of things. He's done them in some of the largest mosques in Europe and so on. And I asked him point blank, is this a true expression of Islam? Now, he studied these things for years. He learned Arabic in order to do it. He's debated Muslim leaders for years and years now. And he said, really, there are two competing ideas. There is one idea where this would be mainstream Islam and where what these murderers did today would be an act that God would be pleased with and in keeping with the Quran and in keeping with the example of Muhammad. Certainly we know that Muhammad was responsible for the beheading of 800 Jews who were defeated and could have just been taken as prisoners of war or subjugated. Instead, he oversaw their beheading. And that's a large part of where the example comes from. But then there's a lot in the Quran, and there's a lot in Islamic tradition that says, no, that was just during the war years. In other words, that was just like Joshua and the children of Israel taking the land of Canaan and killing men, women, and children. But once the battles were fought, now Islam is a religion of peace. And in fact, you have, over the centuries, times where Christians, Jews, and Muslims lived under Muslim rule. And even though the Muslims were higher and the Christians and Jews were lower, there was no threat to their lives. They were protected. And there are many Muslims around the world who are absolutely appalled by this. So to be fair, I am going to call it Islam. I'm not just going to call it Islamist and come up with another name. or just say they're terrorists. I will call them Muslims, but I'll say they're radical. Now, that could mean... I'll let you respond. That could mean, Brian, that radical means they are taking things too far, or radical could mean true to the real spirit of it. It is, to me, an open question. Over the centuries, Islam has often acted like this. Islam has often been murderous like this and continues to be. In a country like Pakistan, Christians are terribly persecuted by Islam. At other times and in other countries, for example, Indonesia, that's not the case. Is it the fact, and Indonesia is the world's largest Muslim country, is that because Indonesia is not really Muslim? Chew on that. We'll come back and I'll get you the last word on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
France has been the source of one of the biggest numbers of European citizens who have gone to fight the jihadi cause in Iraq and Syria over the last couple of years. Some 1,000 French people have been involved in one way or another in that, according to the French authorities. So one of the big fears of the French government, which had repeatedly had been made public by the Prime Minister, in particular Manuel Valls, was that there was a fear of blowback. He called it the most serious threat to France of terrorism. That is, people coming back from the jihadi movements in the Middle East to fight the fight, if you like, bring the fight back to home soil.
And according to report I'm looking at here on the Telegraph from England, the shooters, the terrorists, the Muslim shooters, radical Muslims, it killed in cold blood 12 in France. They said that they were from Yemen and Al-Qaeda, or associated with Yemen and Al-Qaeda. When I was at the airport getting ready to fly out to Tampa last Saturday, a gentleman came up to me, recognized me from some TV shows. He's a Navy SEAL over 30 years. We were talking about things in the Middle East where he's worked and been based, and he told me, Yemen, it's unbelievable what's happening there. Well, it's coming to our doorsteps. All right. So, Brian in Boston, just wanted to give you the last word on the radical Islam issue. So, back to you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Doctor. But I disagree with everything you said for the most part before. Now, I'm not saying that every Muslim out there is trying to hurt or kill people. No. But what you're doing here let me digress for a second. What I understand from a guy named Kamal Saleem, who is a born-again Christian now, used to be a fighter for Hamas, for the Muslim Brotherhood, and I don't have time to go over his whole life plan, but from what he's been telling me and what I've read and other, even in some of the doctrines of Quran and stuff like that, Muhammad was a perfect deceiver, and he claimed Allah was a perfect deceiver. And what's going on here in America and Europe and everything else, when you tell people that Islam as a rule is that there's really another side to it. There's a friendly side, a peaceful side, and all that. You're blinding people. You're blinding people. These organizations, CARE, and these Islamic resource centers and everything like that, according to Kamal Saleem, who worked directly with the royal family in Saudi Arabia, they are part of what they call the sixth pillar of Islam, invisible pillar. It's a type of jihad. I totally agree. I disagree. I think you need.
Yeah, but see, Brian, here's where you're not giving me enough credit, though, because I know all that. I've had regularly on this show Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch. Okay, I've had a couple times on the show Waleed Shubat, who's as militant and radical, and I give them absolute freedom to speak. And regularly on my Facebook page, I get Muslims furious with me because I'm posting things constantly saying that this is a valid expression of Islam. You're not giving me enough credit. And see, if I do it your way, then nobody listens except the tiniest group, because they know for a fact that there are Muslim leaders and Muslim theologians who are appalled by this and who have many texts and many sources backing this up and have lived a certain way over the centuries and are not just being deceptive. So if I do it your way, we get the tiniest, tiniest audience to listen, and the rest throw it out because there's too much evidence against it. When I say that there are plenty of Muslims who differ with this, but this is a valid expression of Islam, and justification can be found in the Quran and the life of Muhammad and Islamic tradition, and I'm shouting, wake up, for the world to hear. I'm not blinding anybody, Brian. I'm not deceiving anybody. And I am telling the truth. And just understand this, too. I'll give you this one last example. I can't tell you what country, I can't tell you what city, and I can talk about this without breaking down crying now, but a few years ago, one of our spiritual sons, 29 years old, married with two kids, grad from our ministry school, serving with other couples, lovingly sharing the gospel in Muslim communities, was slaughtered by Al-Qaeda terrorists. Okay, he was assassinated. I can't talk about it because we still have many people in that part of the world. The day afterwards, there was a march in his city. I watched it on YouTube. Muslims, women in burqas, marching down the streets, protesting, saying this is not Islam. It's not a crime to be a Christian in our city. He was a wonderful teacher. He should not have been shot. Al-Qaeda does not represent Islam. And in doing so, they were risking their own lives. That was not a sham, Brian. As they were holding up signs with his picture and naming their kids after him, that was not a sham. So, Brian, there's more to the story. If you'll have a balanced view on it, you'll be able to help more people. All we need to prove is that this is a valid expression of Islam and that these people are doing what they're doing in the name of Islam and the spirit of Islam, and we have proven our point. But great dialogue, much appreciated, and I really appreciate the degree of interest you've taken in this subject. Okay, last thing. There is the idea that everybody is game. Everybody is a target. You disagree with Islam, speak out against it. You stand with Israel, you're a target. Listen to this discussion. This is CNN, clip number six, Joey. CNN anchor Ashley Banfield, she's talking with Alan Dershowitz after the synagogue attack in Israel and four Jewish men slaughtered in cold blood by Muslim terrorists. Listen to this dialogue, clip number six.
I think Americans can really identify with this, having been involved in a war on terror for 13 years. Mm-hmm. It is still a war. It is not just crimes. Effectively, there's a philosophical war going on, and soldiers come in all forms. Yeah. And when you have mandatory conscription and service in Israel, effectively the Palestinians will say it's war against everyone because everyone's a soldier.
Well, that's just racism and bigotry to say that everyone is a soldier.
But everybody is.
No, not everybody is. First of all, number one. Number two, they're not soldiers at the time. The law was very clear. You can't kill a two-year-old child claiming he's going to be a soldier, because then Israel could say, we can kill a two-year-old Palestinian because he'll grow up and be a terrorist. You have to have rules of warfare. Mm-hmm. And rules of warfare forbid the deliberate killing of civilians. And this was a deliberate killing of civilians in a synagogue.
And Alan Dershowitz said this to the Allgemeiner publication, Jewish publication, that Ashley Banfield had, quote, parroted Hamas's outrageous claim that every two-year-old and 90-year-old in Israel is a soldier. I mean, she said it. Everyone is a soldier. It's particularly ironic in the context of an attack on the synagogue because the people killed were beyond military age. He further said, for her to raise this outrageous argument in the context of the synagogue shooting, it really required me to control my temper. Boy, oh boy. I'm glad he said what he said. All right, friends, in case you haven't taken advantage of this yet, all this week, we're making available my commentary on Jeremiah. I worked on it over a period of years, came out a few years back, and has been warmly received. I was just reading comments of readers, how blessed they were by it, how to open up the text to them, and how, of course, the burning heart of the prophet Jeremiah will be exposed to their own hearts, to your heart as you read it. We've reduced the price. We're paying the postage. Together with Lamentations and Ezekiel, the book you'll get is 900-plus pages, and 550 pages is my Jeremiah commentary, and we'll sign it and inscribe it with a scripture reference. To order, go right now. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. You'll also see a video there where we talk about the book, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we are now changing subjects from radical Islam, changing subjects radically. Unless you have a question you want to ask me relative to that, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to change subjects. And again, shout out to all of our new listeners on WARV Providence, Rhode Island, 1590 AM, and WBCI Portland, Maine, 105.9 FM. And you know what? One of these days, we'll do a little giveaway just for all of our new listeners on WARV and WBCI. You can hear us at this time, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday. If you're not connected with me, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or just through a website getting e-blast, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, click on the Facebook icon to connect with us there, the Twitter icon there. YouTube, as we put out regular videos each week, you can subscribe to that channel and latest articles. In fact, I've got a very intense article coming out tonight about the architect of the greatest genocide in human history. Shocking quotes, background to the life of Margaret Sanger. When you hear what she wrote in her so-called Negro Project, wanted to see an increase of abortions in Black America. When you hear what she wrote, you will be mortified. 866-34-TRUTH. A quick story here from England. You ready for this? Okay, let me back up first and say that President Bush was slated to go overseas recently and did not go because of the potential that there could be an attempt to arrest him while he was there on war crimes charges. Yeah, for the war in Iraq. Seriously. Well, according to the story on the Telegraph from England, again, Tony Blair, former Prime Minister Tony Blair, could face war crimes charges as a result of the Iraq War Inquiry Report. The House of Lords has been told Lord Dykes of Harrow Weald, a Liberal Democrat peer, claimed that the publication of the inquiry by Sir John Chilcot was being delayed to, quote, prolong the agony of the former Labour Prime Minister Lord Hurd, who, as Douglas Hurd, was Conservative Foreign Secretary from 1989 to 1995, said the delay was now becoming a scandal. Lord Wallace of Saltair, a government minister, disclosed for the first time that talks over the publication of the gist of conversations between Mr. Blair and George W. Bush, the former U.S. president, were now completed. These talks have held up the publication of the report, so on. In any case, here, a couple of quotes here. Is not this continuing delay an utter and total disgrace since so much time has elapsed? Is my noble friend aware that more and more people think it is some kind of attempt to prolong the agony of Mr. Blair facing possible war crime charges? Hey, look, I am all for holding every nation up to the highest ethical behavior when it comes to war. I mean, we're talking about human beings. We're talking about people. Look, we're utterly outraged with this murderous act in Paris today. The world is outraged. Well, some radical Muslims are rejoicing, but much of the world is outraged over this. The civilized world is outraged over this. And yet, if there was an all-out war going on, you wouldn't be thinking about 12. You'd be thinking about 12,000 or 100,000 or a million casualties. So if we're going to engage in war, we want to engage in war carefully. But I believe that that's what President Bush did, whether he was misled about information with weapons of mass destruction or not. But I believe our government acted circumspectly, whether it was a rightly conducted war or the wisest war, or whether we had a good exit strategy. Those are all questions to ask. But I believe the same with Tony Blair going into Iraq, especially these years back that are being discussed. And to say that they're possible war crimes, come on. All right, you're ready to really hear something wild? We come back. Stay tuned. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. All right, we are changing subjects now. This Worldview Wednesday, focusing on what's happening in the world around us and seeking to have a kingdom perspective on the news. Okay, I just had this up in front of me and pulled it down. You probably heard about the teenager Joshua Alcorn, who used the name Leela to speak of what he believed was his true female identity. And he killed himself December 27th, walked in front of a tractor trailer. But he left a note saying that this was because he had no real hope or future. His parents, who were Christian, wouldn't accept the fact that he was really a girl, that he was really a woman. When he turned 16 and wanted to begin to transition, so that would be hormone treatments to stop the further development in a male way, so that when he'd have sex change surgery, he would look more female. In other words, the later you do it in life, the harder it is to cover up who you really are biologically. So that added to the depression. Then there are other factors. Could have been other issues with friends. In any case, according to his accounts, Joshua's accounts, by going to Christian counseling, he learned to hate religion. It caused him to hate religion. So the parents have been absolutely blasted for not going along with him being a woman, a female, and not referring to him by female pronoun. They were not aware that he used the name Leela. All the articles that you read about this will constantly talk about she. And in other words, there is no external test of any kind. There is no verification that is subject to testing, unless there was some clear chromosomal or biological issue, which in the vast majority of cases, as I understand it, those who identify as transgender is not the case. And the fact that postmortem exams of transgender-identified people, postmortem exams of their brains, have shown that, say, men had more of a female brain, that's fully understood, though, that could be the result of plasticity. Brain plasticity, in other words, the brain adjusts and adapts, and you fix on a particular thing or feel a particular thing, the brain is going to show that. In any case, it's a terribly painful situation, and I wrote about it with great sensitivity. If you didn't read my article, please do. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. You'll see it a couple down. Did Christian parents drive their child to suicide? I also said there's another side to the story. We need to recognize that there are many who want sex change surgery who then regret it afterwards. And there are many suicides after sex change surgery. And a lot of it is because the person really is not who they think they are. They are who their biology tells them they are. And I talk about the need for great sensitivity in dealing with this issue. Well, Dan Savage, outspoken gay activist and sex columnist, Dan Savage has now called for charging the parents in a court of law, charging the parents with murder after Joshua's suicide. Yeah, that's how far this has gone. Now, let me make this clear. We are looking at the trajectory. We are not just looking at one individual. When you talk about redefining marriage, you might say, but this gay couple, they really love each other. I understand that. You redefine marriage, you make it meaningless. You redefine marriage, you affect all of society. These are not little things you just play with and experiment with. No, let's just reinvent the meaning of the word marriage. Oh, let's reinvent with mother or father or husband or wife. No, it's just, you can't just do that without much larger consequences. And we're seeing that unfold daily in our society. So when I talk about trajectory, now please hear me. I am not being insensitive to someone who says, you don't understand, man. I know, as surely as you know that you're a male, someone's telling me right now or thinking right now, we're going to hear this broadcast or write to me and say, you don't understand. Mike Brown, as sure as you know that you are a male, this person says, even though I'm in a man's body, I know I'm a female to the core of my being. And I tried to change and I couldn't. And it's only when I identify as a female that I have mental wholeness and peace. You don't understand. Oh, I don't understand firsthand, but I understand it's that real to you. Look, I was in dialogue with someone who in his late 60s started to transition from male to female. Why at that age? And what did it do to the marriage? And what did it do to his relationship with his boys? I talked to another man at length. Well, email interaction. He was very unhappy with me and felt I was terribly bigoted and insensitive, especially because I wouldn't call him she. But he had been married, I think, 37 years. And he said to me that his sex change effectively destroyed his marriage and rendered his wife a widow. And I said, but you're called to love your wife as Christ loved the church. That means you laid down your life for her. He said it was either sex change or suicide. So, no, I'm not justifying it. Either way, I'm not justifying destroying the marriage. I'm simply giving you his perspective. But I'm saying I understand it's that real to people. What I'm saying here is not insensitive. It is simply saying this. If gender is defined by how you feel, no matter how deep those feelings are, ultimately gender becomes virtually meaningless. Ultimately, it goes in ways that very, very, very few Americans want to see it go. Now, I've been documenting this for some years. My newest book, which is due to come out in the middle of this year, will explains why the gay revolution has the seeds of failure in it and what we must do, principles to live by to outlast the gay revolution. My book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, which came out in 2011, documents a lot of this. But I want you to hear some more. Someone posted this on my Facebook page, asked me if I had seen it, and it was about human-animal equality and queer animals. I just want you to hear some of the comments that are being made. I'm not even going to identify the people making the comments, but I just want you to know that this is considered to be perfectly appropriate. Joy, we'll start with clip number 12.
The other important thing about gender expression is it's not necessarily fixed. It could vary from day to day, even hour to hour. Some people even have a different gender identity when they wake up in the morning. They say, you know, I feel like I'm a woman today or I'm a man today. And that's just their identity and their expression. And it's all authentic.
Okay. I believe that people who feel their gender switches over the course of the day or even by the hour, that those people need serious professional help. I do not believe that their gender genuinely changes. I do not believe that they genuinely are a male for 1 hour and a female the next hour, and that there is anything real to that whatsoever. Zero. It is a problem on the inside. Clip number 13. Let's hear a little bit more.
I would say that we should not call our fellow animals, non-human animals, by it either. Now, these animals cannot tell us what their gender identity is, so unfortunately we have to make some assumptions based on their anatomy. It's imperfect, but I think that it's much better to call an animal she or he to respect that that animal is a person, just like humans or people, than to call that animal it.
Oh, okay. It's not appropriate for me to do this on radio, and I don't want to scare anyone, but could someone who's in a quiet room or where you're by yourself or driving in a car where you're by yourself or you're with friends and you're all listening together, could someone please just scream on my behalf? Now you say, well, hang on. You're mixing apples with oranges. On the one hand, they're talking about gender, but now they're talking about human-animal equality and so on. Oh, I understand they're two different subjects. I'm simply talking about the flights from reality. I wrote an article almost a year ago called Call Me Tractor. I should have put in a different title to the article because people didn't understand what it was about. But I said this, for the last few years, our moral and cultural opponents have mocked our predictions, telling us that we are deluded, that there is no slippery slope, that the scenarios we warn about are just figments of our overactive fundamentalist imagination. Are they right? So August of 2013, I wrote an article entitled Boys Will Be Girls Will Be Boys, adapting the title of the article from a 2004 coloring book called Girls Will Be Boys Will Be Girls. The purpose of this children's book was to deconstruct, quote, traditional gender roles. In the article, I discussed California Assembly Bill 1266, which had just been passed in California, allowing students in grades K through 12 not only to choose which bathroom they use based on their perceived gender, but also to choose which sports teams they played on, meaning the boys' team or the girls' team, using their respective locker rooms as well. As I explained, this meant that 18-year-old Sam, who's convinced he's actually Sally, can not only come to school dressed as a girl and use the girls' bathroom, he can play on the girls' basketball team and use their locker room, too. Needless to say, I was ridiculed for making this comment and scolded for my lack of understanding. Well, what happened immediately after meant I was no longer subject to ridicule, because what I had said came to pass. Wait till you hear about this interview on NPR, National Public Radio. Young people push back against gender categories.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, one woman on the website about queer animals said, my goal is total animal, queer, and trans liberation. Now, most don't put the animal category in there, but plenty do put the queer and trans liberation, which means complete liberation from gender categories. I'm going to go back to my article in a moment, but let's play clip number 14. I just want you to hear a little bit more of what's being said.
Realize that most of the time when you use a third person pronoun such as she or he or they, this person is not going to be around to hear it, but you should still practice it so you remember. And the same goes for non-human animals. They may not be able to understand our language, so you might think, well, why does it matter if I refer to an animal as it, because they're not going to understand that language. But it's just it's a reminder that this animal is a person and that we should respect them as an individual.
You know, Matt, maybe I missed something. I mean, I'm not quite 60 yet, so maybe I just missed this in class or school or somewhere in my studies. I didn't know that an animal was a person. Joey, did you learn? Maybe education's really improved these days, and the younger ones are getting it. Maybe you make sure, you know, your kids, your little kids, Joey, that you make sure they know that an animal is not an animal; it's actually a person. Do animals have personalities? Yes, especially the more intelligent ones. Are animals people? No. But what was the point of that clip? The point of that clip was to say that if, let's say your name is Sam, you're biologically a male, but you identify as a female and you want to be called she, that even when you're not around, I should refer to you as she. And if you want to be called they or them, then that's how I refer to you. If you feel there are multiple identities or you just don't want to be put in a category, then that's how you are referred to. And, well, bottom line is that you should do the same with an animal, even if the animal doesn't understand. It's just like a person who is not there. Saw a question asked me on Facebook by a woman, godly woman. She said her daughter, grown daughter, is now come out and said that she's transitioning to become a man, and she wants to be referred to as they. Yeah, this is what she told her mother. The mother's saying, what do I do? I said, you love her unconditionally, but that's your daughter. You call her she. You call her. You call her by her name. And you say, but some people, it's really deep. I think it's really deep with many. I also think the way our society goes helps people who are unstable get confused in these ways. And there are others that when they're 2 years old, they begin to feel something different that they couldn't express. And I understand how deep it is, and I believe we need to search to try to get to the roots of those things. But what this movement is saying, there's no distinction between animals and people, and there's no distinction between genders. So when I was ridiculed for making the comment about, look, a boy could join the girls' team and use the girls' locker room and so on, well, February 14th of last year, it was announced that a 17-year-old male student who now identifies as a female, but who's had no sex change surgery or even hormonal treatments and who played on the freshman baseball team as a male will be playing on the girls' softball team. Randy Thomason, president of SaveCalifornia.com, commented Fox News, it's categorically unfair to biological girls to have to compete with a sexually confused young man with stronger upper body strength who makes the game board decidedly unequal. All right, well, NPR radio. Again, my issue is trajectory. My issue is what happens when you lose sight of gender distinctions? What happens when you redefine marriage? Please, please, let's not be so myopic. Let's not be so small-minded. Let's not be so micro-focused that we don't look at the macro, that we don't look at the larger, that we don't look at the consequences. Please. So, let's listen to some of this dialogue. Remember, we brought attention to Facebook last year as they yielded to the complaints of drag queens. Maybe someone on Facebook, the real name would be Rich Black, but he identifies as Big Susie, and that's how he likes to be known. Well, on Facebook, he had to use his real name. So there was a protest, and because Facebook seeks to be so gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual friendly, they ultimately yield and said, okay, we'll give people 50 different ways to choose and describe their gender. You can use 10 different descriptions simultaneously. This is for America only, so what, 160-something million Facebook users in America. And they click, when you're setting up your profile, you click on customize for gender. And then you just, well, you can be whoever you think you are in 10 identities at once. And GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, that was originally was. I renamed it as the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Disagreement. But GLAAD said, well, it's a good step in the right direction because it wasn't comprehensive. It only had 50 different descriptions, but it was a good step in the right direction. This is Facebook. And now this move on change.org has gotten tremendous momentum to enact what's called Lila's Law to ban transgender conversion therapy, meaning if someone is confused about their gender identity, it's got almost 300,000 signatories already, which is a lot. They don't normally get that many on petitions there. It's got to be a major petition. I mean, others have had more, but that's a lot in a short period of time. Saying it's dangerous and destructive to tell people they can change. I'm saying let's get to the root. Let's invest more time and effort and energy, spiritual and secular, to get to the root of these issues and really help people. Wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be better if we could help them from the inside out so they didn't have to go on hormones for life, so that they could be fully male or fully female and not have to go through sex change surgery? Wouldn't that be better? Well, anyway, July 16th, 2013, NPR had a radio program, Young People Push Back Against Gender Categories. And according to the host, Margot Adler, the fascinating thing with this generation in high school and college is they're going way beyond transgender. They're arguing for a world beyond the gender binary, beyond male and female, and something that many people over 30 like myself are totally unaware of. And Joy Layden, described as a trans woman, a male to female transgender person, said, the folks who are cutting edge and exciting, they're gender fluid, they're gender complicated, they're gender queer, they have some kind of much more dynamic relationship. And there are some young people, they said, don't want to be male or female. Some said, call me Tractor, and use pronouns like Z, Zim, and Zer. And in fact, I reject the gender binary as an oppressive move by the dominant culture. While we have great compassion for those who struggle, this may be going on in your own home. You may be struggling with these issues in your own home, in your own church. We need great compassion and love of God and wisdom to help deal with these complex and difficult situations. We must celebrate gender distinction and stand against the blurring of gender for sanity's sake and for the sake of families and society. All right, remember to connect on the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Take advantage of the Jeremiah commentary. If you love the word, if you love to study, you'll be enriched by this commentary that I wrote, studied it for years, 550 pages. It also comes with commentaries on Lamentations and Ezekiel by other top scholars. So over 900 pages together, just $40 postage paid, reduced price, and we're paying the postage. And I'm signing it as well. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, sometimes it really feels like the whole world is going totally crazy. It's been crazy for a long time. That's why we run to refuge in the Lord and make Him known. Has the mayor of Atlanta declared war on free Christian speech?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. It is Wednesday, Worldview Wednesday, focusing on what's happening in the world around us. First hour, we talked about the tragic radical Islamic shootings in France. If you haven't heard about that, a magazine, a satirical magazine that would mock Muhammad and Islam and was anti-religion in general, certainly hostile to Catholicism there in France as well, but completely within their legal rights to speak out and do what they did. Radical Muslims came in, it's on videotaped, they began to shoot down these journalists, editors in cold blood, murdered 12 of them. And of course, France is in an uproar. But no surprise, it's tragic, but it's absolutely not surprising. We talked about that. We talked about some other news and the continuing discussion after the suicide of Joshua Alcorn, a young man who identified as a woman, because of whom there is an outcry, an uproar, saying that so-called transgender conversion therapy should be banned. In other words, helping a boy who believes he's a girl adjust to the fact that he is a boy. That's a cry, a call to ban that. We talked about that. We talked about the importance of gender distinctions, but we're changing gears now, changing direction, talking about free speech, freedom of speech, 866-34-TRUTH. Here's what happened in Atlanta. In fact, I'm going to let the mayor speak for himself. And let's play, well, we'll start with clip number 7. This is Mayor Reed of Atlanta explaining why he fired Atlanta Fire Chief Kevin J. Cochran.
The city's position is a very clear one. The city's non-discrimination policy, endorsed by my office and by the Atlanta City Council, really unequivocally states that we will not negotiate, that we will not discriminate on the basis of race, nor gender, nor religion, nor creed, nor sexual orientation, nor physical ability, nor gender identity.
Okay, so here's what happened. What the mayor is doing is now discriminating over religion, because the fire chief, who seems to be a committed Christian, written a book, published a book. In the book, he spoke against homosexual practice. Because of that, he has been fired. Let's hear some more from Mayor Reed, clip number 8.
Any person that violates this conduct or creates an environment where we believe that that is the concern will not be a part of our administration. Said another way, we have a strong non-discrimination policy.
Now, according to the mayor, this was simply a violation of policy, and the fire chief should have gotten permission to publish the book, self-published it, 2013. It's called Who Told You That You Were Naked? And in the book, homosexuality is described as a perversion. Now, many Christians would feel that way. They are not calling someone who's same-sex attracted, you're a pervert. Well, some would, which is not wise and it's not the gospel. If someone acts out perverted ways and does perverted things, yeah, then that's another issue. But if someone's same-sex attracted, you're not saying the person is a pervert. You're saying that homosexuality itself is a perversion of God's intent for human sexuality. You'd make a biblical case for that. Well, no. Not if you're a fire chief in Atlanta. You get fired. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, so let's just get into this a little bit more, and let's look at what is actually happening in our society in a major American city like Atlanta. This is Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed. He has terminated fire chief in Atlanta. Initially, when word got out about the fire chief's self-published book, he was placed on suspension and he was forced to undergo sensitivity training, according to the reports that I am reading. His suspension is over and now he is terminated. Now you say, well, how do gay activists respond? Because certainly they want equality and fairness for everyone. No, no, no. Equality goes one way. Tolerance goes one way. Fairness goes one way. Diversity goes one way. It's been demonstrated, documented for some time now. Quote, certainly we agree with Mayor Reed's position on this and his rationale for it, said Georgia Equality Executive Director Jeff Graham, who called for Cochran's firing in November. This is not about his religious views, but his ability to lead a diverse workforce. I feel the mayor has done the right thing to ensure all employees are treated fairly. Or, excuse me, Mr. Graham, when is there evidence that they weren't treated fairly? Are you telling me that there is documented evidence, credible evidence, that Fire Chief Cochran was not treating employees fairly if they identified as LGBT? Is that what you're telling me? That it was documented that he discriminated against them, that it was documented that he demeaned them, that it was documented that he did not properly promote them or give them recognition or call them names or had a workplace environment that was hostile to them? You say, no, 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 he doesn't need to do any of that. He simply held private views. When I mean private, I mean they were not views that he was posting through the fire department and preaching to everyone, okay? His views were put out in a self-published book. Who Told You That You Were Naked? That's the name of the book. In it, he classified homosexuality as an affront to purity. Here's the quote. Uncleanness. Here's how he defines it. Whatever is opposite of purity, including sodomy, homosexuality, lesbianism, pederasty, bestiality, all of the forms of sexual perversion. Yeah, you can make a biblical case that all of those acts are sexually perverse. They are contrary to God's design, God's order, God's plan, and they are sexually perverse. Sure, I mean, that's clearly something you could teach from Scripture. The problem is you can't hold to that and make that known, or you could lose your job. Now, you say, no, but Mike, you're not getting it. You can't discriminate based on gender identity or based on sexual orientation. He wasn't. He wasn't discriminating. He was holding the view that homosexual practice is perverse. He was not discriminating against anybody. And let's go further. Discrimination has taken place. Discrimination has taken place against his religious beliefs. How are you going to deny that? How are you possibly going to divide that? The man has Christian beliefs, biblical beliefs. What he said would reflect teaching found elsewhere in Scripture. Not everyone would say it the same way, but it would reflect that. He's being told you cannot have your religious beliefs. Let me go back to this quote from the director of Georgia Equality, Jeff Graham, who called for Cochran's firing in November. Quote, certainly we agree with Mary Reed's position on this and his rationale for it. This is not about his religious views. Yes, it is about his religious views. Oh, excuse me. But his ability to lead a diverse workforce, quote, I feel the mayor has done the right thing to ensure all employees are treated fairly. He was not treated fairly. Does not Mr. Graham see the extreme irony of his statements? Boy, oh, boy. That's why I've said for years, friends, for a decade, Plus, those who came out of the closet now want to put us in the closet. And, please hear me carefully, when I first said that, I was mocked and ridiculed, and people said to me, nobody is trying to put you in the closet. And then, a few years later, you know what they began to say? Bigots like you belong in the closet. At what point will we wake up? Does that mean that we're going to get to get? No. You reach out to everyone with love. You have a gay neighbor, gay family member, gay friend, gay coworker. That's a fellow human being created in the image of God for whom Jesus died and for whom you express unconditional love, for whom you demonstrate the goodness and graciousness of God face to face, while saying, I disagree with goals of gay activism and homosexual practice is sinful, and I don't believe that two men or two women coming together can actually marry in God's sight. And you do it as a civil human being reflecting the character of Christ. I understand people still call you hateful. I understand people still feel you're attacking them personally. Yeah, I understand, of course. But through perseverance and love, we overcome that. And if we're still called bigots, so be it. Jesus was called a lot worse. A summary of the book on Amazon from God's perspective. Nakedness meant so much more. It meant condemnation and deprivation to his most precious creation, mankind. And in the midst of that, he says what he says about homosexuality. Quote, naked men refuse to give in, so they pursue sexual fulfillment through multiple partners with the opposite sex, the same sex and sex outside of marriage, and many other vile, vulgar, and inappropriate ways which defile their body, their temple, and dishonor God. Hang on. Whoa. There should be an uproar. There should be an uproar from heterosexuals who sleep around. They should have joined the lynch mob to get rid of Fire Chief Cochran, because he says here that multiple partners with the opposite sex, he also mentions same sex, and sex outside of marriage, he refers to them as vile, vulgar, and inappropriate ways which defile the body, the temple, the physical body, and dishonor God. Whoa. Well, what do you think of that? Then there should be some heterosexual uproar. We invited the mayor on the air, and he said, his office said, here's his stance, and he's not making appearances on this, which, of course, is common. So nothing's changed in that regard. Fire Chief Cochran has spoken about the blessings of suffering during a message he delivered at First Baptist Church on Sunday. But I want you to hear this. There was attempt to get further clarification, after further attention from Georgia Voice, the Reid administration, Mayor Reid's administration, issued a statement saying they were unaware of Cochran's work before it hit the printing presses. Quote, the Reid administration was not notified of the book before it was published. The Reid administration will not tolerate discrimination of any kind. The Reid administration is currently conducting a review of the facts surrounding the book. If disciplinary action is recommended as a result of the investigation, we will take decisive action to prevent any inappropriate behavior from occurring in the future. You got to be kidding me. You've got to notify the mayor's office. If you, I assume policemen, civil servant, fire chief, you got to notify them. If you're going to put a book out, a religious book, you're going to notify them? Am I understanding this correctly? Is the Reid administration saying that if, let's say, the fire chief was a gay activist or a straight ally and was putting out a book calling for solidarity with the gay community, that he would have to get permission from the Reid administration before publishing that book? If he was publishing a book calling for an end to police brutality, that he'd have to get the permission of the mayor's office to put it out? That if he put out a book saying that Christian interpretation of the Bible forbidding homosexual practice is biased and bigoted, that he'd have to get the okay from the Reid administration? If that is the case, which I seriously doubt, you're talking about thought police. You talk about something draconian. You're talking about Big Brother is watching. But my suspicion is that's not the case at all. The issue was that the book took issue with homosexual practice. Reid made sure to tell the press that Cochran's views expressed in a 2013 book neither represented him nor the city. Some gay groups stated at the time that Cochran's punishment wasn't nearly harsh enough. He will be back in charge, and I'm sure telling his staff anti-LGBT stuff, the mayor should fire him, Glenn Paul Friedman said. And who is he? Chair of Georgia Equalities Board of Directors. Georgia Equalities Board. Is that ironic or what? 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to talk about this a little bit longer. If you want to call in, weigh in, share your thoughts, please do. And then we are changing subjects and may get more controversial yet. Stay tuned.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So let's stop trying to make this about religious freedom when it's about making sure that we have an environment in government where everyone, no matter who they love, can come to work from 8:30 or 8 to 5:30 and do their job, and then go home without fear of being discriminated against. That is what this is about.
Mayor Reid, how about inserting this, because you have discrimination clauses. You have anti-discrimination clauses, which include religion, all right? So how about, no matter who they love or no matter what they believe religiously, How about inserting that sentence, sir, that clause? Or, yeah, what about people who say, well, I love God. Is that okay? No matter who you love, well, what if I love God and God doesn't approve of certain things? And please show me the evidence that there was discrimination, that Fire Chief Cochran was discriminating. You say, yeah, but if people know what he believes, well, look, what if he had a Bible on his desk? And people just knew that he was a conservative Christian. He never talked about it. What if they just knew what his beliefs were? Are you not allowed to hold those beliefs? What if he had preached from the pulpit in his church and was going through the book of Romans, was asked to do that and preach about homosexual practice and why it's sinful in God's sight? Would you fire him over that? Because now people are going to know what he believes. I mean, what's mind-boggling to me is not that this happened. What's mind-boggling is the justification that's given for it without realizing the extraordinary hypocrisy of it. Clip number 9. Let's hear some more from Mayor Reid.
His personal religious beliefs are not the issue at all, despite the number of comments and emails that I have been receiving on a daily basis. The city and my administration stand firmly in support of the right to religious freedom. Freedom of speech, and the right to freely observe one's faith. And I also want to point out to a lot of folks who've been calling my home, emailing me on a nonstop basis, that I too am a person of very deep religious faith.
Oh, please. I would love to sit alone in the room with Mayor Kasim Reid, face to face, where he couldn't equivocate and where I would have to respond to him directly and say, excuse me, Mayor, these are the man's religious beliefs, and freedom of speech is also freedom of what you write. That's part of freedom of speech. And you are firing him. You are firing him because of his privately held religious beliefs that he also expressed in a book. You are firing him over freedom of religion and freedom of speech. Matt, I got to write. Do we have all these transcribed? Well, we'll get them transcribed because I got to put these in an article and write it before the week is. That's about the only thing to say. All right, let's let the mayor speak a little further. Clip number 10.
Every single employee under the fire chief's command deserves the certainty that he or she is a valued member of the team, and that fairness and respect guide employment decisions. His actions around the book
and his statements during this investigation have eroded my confidence in his ability to convey that message. I also want to point out that if we had made the decision to retain Chief Cochran, really that the folks in the Fire and Rescue Department who may have been discriminated against in some future occasion would have had a valid case in my mind, and I know Kathy's getting nervous, but after the fire chief so clearly stated his position on a number of issues, I thought that it created a potential liability for the city that was unacceptable to me as mayor of the city of Atlanta.
In other words, there's no discrimination now. We have no evidence of discrimination. No one's ever brought a charge of discrimination. But if they ever did bring a charge of discrimination, if he ever did discriminate in the future and something would happen, and therefore we knew he had these beliefs, therefore we got to fire him now, otherwise we'd have liability because we knew that he could potentially discriminate because he had these religious beliefs, even though there had never been any evidence of discrimination ever in his history. So perhaps, because the mayor has said these things, and it's possible that in the future that he might actually commit a violent act against someone who has these religious beliefs, and then the whole city would be culpable because of not restraining the mayor now, we should get him out of office. It would be that ludicrous. Look, yeah, I'm a talk radio host. I talk. I love to talk. I preach and teach all the time. When I'm not doing that, I'm writing. But sometimes things leave me almost speechless. We've just gone on the air at a new station in Providence, Rhode Island, so I'll probably mention this in the first hour when they get the broadcast. But two Catholic firefighters who were ordered to drive a fire truck in a gay pride parade decided to sue on the basis of their religious liberties being oppressed. June of 2001, they were forced to drive a fire truck in the Providence gay pride parade. Matt, I just realized, I believe Providence, it's either Providence or Portland, maybe, but one of them is one of the most gay activist cities in the nation. Curious to know which. It'd be great if we could get some of the gay callers, if there are in that area, gay activists to call in and we can interact in a civil way and educate each other on why we feel the way we do. Anyway, so this was June 2001. They were forced to drive a fire truck in the Providence Gay Pride Parade, according to Fox News. They expressed that they were uncomfortable driving the parade due to their faith, but were ordered to do so anyway. They submitted complaints to the city, but after their issue remained unresolved, they decided to sue. On December 26, 2014, the court threw out the lawsuit, unanimously ruling that the city did not violate their constitutional rights because the assignment was, quote, legitimate. Firefighters Theodore Fabrizio Jr. and Stephen Danino claimed that they had to go through sexual harassment and sexual propositions and other offensive remarks during the Pride Parade, and later at least 60 profanity-laced anonymous phone calls and sexual harassment at the hands of their co-workers. The court ruled that there was no deprivation of a constitutional right. Justice William Robinson stated that it was simply the accomplishing of a task assigned to an engine company of the Providence Fire Department, and the individuals chosen to carry out that assignment cannot be said to have engaged in personal speech by carrying out their work as public servants. Oh, come on. It's not known whether they're going to appeal the case. Appeal the case. I know it's burdensome and wearisome, but appeal the case. I'm sure Liberty Counsel, Alliance Defending Freedom, would love to take this on for you further. Appeal the case. And let's continue to expose the bigotry, the intolerance, the discrimination, the lack of diversity, the utter intolerance of the gay activist camp and their allies. Can I encourage you to go to my website right now and watch a show? Well, tell you what, as soon as the show's over, go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click right on the homepage, the Jeremiah commentary. Watch the video there as I tell you about this commentary, how it was written, how it was birthed, what it will mean to you. Now you can get it at a discounted price. Plus, I'm signing it and inscribing it with a scripture reference as well. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, shifting gears yet again. A 180 turn. If it was 360, we'd go around in a circle. 180 turn to focus on some other issues. Tonight at 8 o'clock, my article, weekly article for WorldNet Daily, should be posted. The title I have is The Architect of the Greatest Genocide in History. Now, it's possible that there'll be a different title on the article once it's posted, but my initial title, The Architect of the Greatest Genocide in History. I'm going to talk to you about this, but I'm just encouraging you to brace yourself. You're going to hear some shocking quotes. Oh, they're not sexually explicit or anything like that. You're going to hear some shocking quotes, so I just want to alert you. But I have a question. I have a question for you. I had dinner last week with a black couple that's begun coming to our home congregation, young black couple, and we were talking about race relations. We were talking about family situations, things like that. And they made a comment to me, which, of course, I've heard before, and I believe to be very true. But who would be the principal leaders that young black Americans would look to? Children, teenagers, young people. Who would be the most influential voices in their lives? I don't mean, is there someone more influential than their mother or father in their home? I mean, in society, leaders in society, who do you think is influencing them the most? 866-342. You can give me your opinion. Who do you believe, or if you're an African American, who do you believe is having the greatest influence, speaking into their hearts, their minds, helping them set their values, people they're looking to as role models? Who do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Now, I'm not giving you a lot of time to answer that question, because I'm just going to address it briefly here. But they said something that verified a quote, and you'd call it agree or disagree with this. But there was a quote I read, I think it was Chucky D, who was part of the rap group Public Enemy Number One. If I'm misstating any of these details, they're secondary to the quote. He said, Chuck D, he said that rap is Black America's CNN. In other words, the ones who were most influencing the thinking of Black Americans, it wasn't the newscast, it wasn't the secular media, it was rap stars. That's what this couple said to me, that the Jay-Z's, the others, the well-known rap stars, that they are having more influence on the hearts and minds and lives of young Black Americans than anybody else. And then second to that would be sports stars as role models. Now, there are plenty of negative influences on white Americans. There are plenty of negative influences throughout our culture. People were upset with a picture of Malia Obama wearing a T-shirt of what has been called a nasty anti-cop rap group. I can't even use the name, but the person's the lead singer for Pro Era was just arrested for jacking a security guard. I can't read the lyrics from this group. I can't read hardly any of them at all because it's filled with profanity. And yeah, there's white rap that's filled with profanity too. I understand that. The point is that there is a tremendous cultural influence that we have to factor in as we are seeking to bring racial harmony, dialogue, understanding, that the main voices that are heard by many young Black Americans may not be voices of reason and voices of harmony and voices of solid leadership. At least this was what this black couple was telling me and what rapper Chuck D said many years ago. I want to come back and talk to you about the satanic attack on Black America. Stay tuned.
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Do I want to go there? No. By the way, there is a new show on TLC, Learning Channel, and it's called My Husband's Not Gay. Yep. And more than 70,000 have called on TLC to cancel the show. It's set to air January 11th, follows four Mormon men who reject their sexual orientation because they say their faith is unaccepting of gay people who live their lives authentically. The petition launched by Josh Sanders of Virginia Beach, Virginia, says the program, quote, promotes the false and dangerous idea that gay people can and should choose to be straight and really be part of their faith communities. Sanders is a gay Christian man who was once subjected to so-called reparative therapy, a harmful practice that aims to, quote, turn gay people straight and which nearly every major medical authority has denounced as both dangerous and effective. And he goes on, the show is downright irresponsible, said GLAD President and CEO Sarah Kate Ellis. No one can change who they love, and more importantly, no one should have to. By investing in this dangerous programming, TLC is putting countless young LGBT people in harm's way. And on and on. Anyway, it's just so you can be aware. I was not planning on catching the show either way. Okay. I got some shocking quotes for you. Are you ready? Are you ready? 1999, Harvard University Press published a book called The Black Book of Communism. I got the book, only read parts of it, but it documented how communism had directly resulted in the deaths of at least 100 million people. 100 million. From Stalin to Mao's China. 100 million. And then others that were smaller atrocities. I mean, horrific, massive in scale within their country, but smaller numerically, like the genocide in Cambodia. These were all genocidal acts, okay? Genocidal acts. Well, that number, 100 million, pales in comparison to the number of babies killed by abortion since 1920. At least 1 billion. How do you wrap your mind around 1 billion? That's roughly three times the population of America. The entire country wiped out three times over. That's almost the entire population of China and the entire population of India. What's the population of the continent of Africa? Roughly a billion, somewhere around there. I'm not sure off the top of my head. How do you wrap your mind around those numbers? According to the life site news.com, and this will all be up in my article tonight, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article after 8 tonight. It'll be up. According to life site news, Thomas Jacobson of the Global Life Campaign stated that he has carefully tracked all actual reported numbers of international abortions from 1920 forward and found that the total has exceeded 1 billion since that time. That, he emphasizes, makes abortion the greatest genocide in history, 10 times greater than communism with all its deadly effects. And who's the architect behind the spread of abortion and the popularization of abortion? Certainly Margaret Sanger, who is the founder of Planned Parenthood. Now, I had known many of these things, and I've covered some of these quotes in the past and some of these statistics in the past, but a friend of mine sent me at the end of the year the 20th anniversary edition of George Grant's classic biography of Margaret Sanger. It's only 100 pages long, Killer Angel. George Grant, a prolific author and great Christian thinker and educator, Killer Angel. So reading through the book, I was struck that he starts off by talking about Joseph Stalin and the bloodshed in his legacy, Benito Mussolini, Adolf Hitler, and Margaret Sanger, noting as the founder of Planned Parenthood and the impassioned heroine of various feminist causes celeb, Sanger was responsible for the brutal elimination of more than 30 million children in the United States and as many as 2.5 billion worldwide. She was a destructive radical in every sense of the word. Her passion for abortion was anything but a compassionate burden for poor and underprivileged mothers. To the contrary, she wanted to deal with the so-called human waste, her words, the human weeds, her words, those unfit to be in society, because she believed, under the teaching of Thomas Malthus, late 1700s, early 1800s, a cleric and sometimes professor, that population explosion was inevitable, but that the food production and advance of the human race would fall behind that, so that ultimately there'd be mass famine and horrific suffering and death. Therefore, the goal was to eradicate certain parts of the population. The first edition of her 8-sheet publication, called The Woman Rebel, she denounced marriage as a degenerate institution, capitalism as indecent exploitation, and sexual modesty as obscene prudery. This is Margaret Sanger. Planned Parenthood is still boasting about all the abortions they perform. Planned Parenthood actually announced their annual report, their most recent annual report, speaking of 300,000 plus abortions that they're responsible for. They announced the report with the words safe, smart, connected, strong, global, and that's generation healthy. They're not joking. Generation healthy. All right. Thomas Malthus said this: instead of recommending cleanliness to the poor, we should encourage contrary habits. Why? With the hope that the poor would be wiped out by disease and plague. And he wanted to restrain those, quote, benevolent but much mistaken men who thought they were helping the human race by trying to eradicate disease and plague. So Sanger loved his work and wrote, "My criticism is therefore not directed at the failure of philanthropy," in other words, helping the poor, helping the needy. "My criticism, therefore, is not directed at the failure of philanthropy, but rather at its success. These dangers inherent in the very idea of humanitarianism and altruism, dangers which have today produced their full harvest of human waste. So, by being compassionate towards the poor, the suffering, the needy, it has produced the full harvest of human waste, and whom she called defectives, delinquents, and dependents." How to get rid of them? No, you don't need disease. Abortion. Just kill them before they enter the world. So she started her clinics in neighborhoods filled with, quote, dysgenic immigrants, Southern Europeans, Slavs, Latins, and Jews. And then she developed the Negro Project. This is Margaret Sanger. This is Planned Parenthood. This is the one behind the abortion clinics in poor black neighborhoods. She developed the Negro Project since, she explained, the mass of Negroes, particularly in the South, still breed carelessly and disastrously, with the result that the increase among Negroes, even more than among whites, is from that portion of the population least intelligent and fit. This is the founder of Planned Parenthood. Every black American needs to expose this frontal assault on their dignity, on their honor as human beings. Every African American in this nation needs to take hold of the evil of abortion and the black genocide that has been launched by Margaret Sanger and carried out with excellence by Planned Parenthood. You think I'm going too far? Listen to what she wrote in terms of how to deal with, quote, human weeds. Margaret Sanger, quote, "We should hire 3 or 4 colored ministers, preferably with social service backgrounds and with engaging personalities. The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through a religious appeal. We don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever gets to any of their more rebellious members." So don't tell them what's really happening. Get ministers out there, and let's give this a religious appeal. This is diabolical. This is as destructive and deadly and ugly as is humanly imaginable. And that's why, to this day, abortion is the number one taker of black American lives. It is an assault from below. All right, tell you what, I want to get to the phones, but I've got a break. So when we come back, I'll go straight to the phones. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. What do you think of those quotes? What do you think of what she had to say? Does that give any different face to you, to Planned Parenthood? If you vacillate on pro-life issues, could you say, look, I mean, the kids are poor and orphan raised in broken homes and the mother can't raise another kid, and what's going to happen to that kid, and isn't it merciful and compassionate, what, to kill them in the womb? Why not eliminate them when they're a day old? I mean, if it's a viable human being, that it's conceived in the womb, a human being, you don't slaughter the kid because it'll be inconvenient if they're in this world. According to the blackgenocide.org, 1,876 black babies are aborted every day in the United States. Overall, there are more white babies aborted, but the percentage of black babies is much higher. It is an assault from hell. It is an assault from hell on black America. Yet another attack on our African-American friends from below. I despise it. I abhor it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I've felt this particular way for years. This is nothing new. I felt that there is a special calling and purpose on black Americans of African descent in particular because of the wholesale attack that's come against this community of people through slavery and through segregation and now through abortion. Just as Moses, there was an attack on baby Israelite boys when Moses was born, an attack on baby Judean boys when Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Because of those things, there is deliverers were coming into the world. The Savior was coming into the world. There was an all-out attack. I see those that God wants to raise up in the black American community, and I see the enemy trying to wipe them out one way after another after another. 866-34-TRUTH, just a view I've held to for many years. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Keith, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing?
Doing well, thank you, sir.
The reason why I called in, sir, I really don't have an answer as far as what you say as far as role models. Well, I do have an answer. God, in Jesus' name, should be our role model that we can look up to. But the way society is, man, the way that so much stuff is being accepted now as far as, the gay movement, I like rap, but certain part of rap I don't like. And it's just like anything that's been created far as good, Satan will come along, him and his legion of demons, and they'll turn what was good at one time into something bad. Like, not just hip-hop. Hip-hop started off good, but it just things, Satan put it in the headlock and he ran with it. Even country music. It just, far as what I see now, far as things that we do, I'm a black man, but far as things that we do will get exposed. More than far as stuff that happened in country music or, rock and roll, hockey, not trying to, make it a race thing or anything, but far as certain things that we do will get exposed a lot. And Satan pretty much has his hand in every race, every color, cookie jar, white, black, Chinese. That's, he got his hands in every bad cookie jar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there are different cultural assaults, like you look like a Miley Cyrus, as a role model for young white girls and stuff like that. And, it's out there. And by the way, Keith, I'm all for godly Christian rap. I think it's a great way to get a message out because rap really has a lot of words in it, a lot more than your normal lyrics, and they can be catchy in the rhymes. I don't think, from my knowledge with hip-hop or rap, I don't think it started well. I think it can be redeemed. But what we have to do is look and see if there's a cultural influence. In other words, the devil's got his hands in all different things, and white Americans have problems, and Hispanic Americans, and Native Americans, and Black Americans, and Asian Americans, because we're human beings, so everybody's got problems. What we're looking at, especially, is what's happening in the society and who's influencing who, and. So that's what we've got to look at, these broader issues, and then just try to see within each of our own cultures what we can address in a redemptive way. Hey, Keith, may the Lord's blessing be upon you. This is a very sweet call. Carla didn't want to come on the air. I won't even say where she's from, but very sweet. Thanks for typing this out, Betsy. I support Dr. Brown, and you are awesome as a person can be. I'm a black young female, and I love him. That's it. I support him, and he's my role model. That brings a big, big smile to my face. That is so, so sweet, and I appreciate that very, very much. Boy, we are all in this together. And again, my purpose in raising this is, as we have talked about racial division, as we have talked about bridging gaps. Look, I just in an interview today. I was interviewed today for another publication right before radio, and I talked about the problem with white evangelicals, that we are so associated with the Republican Party, and I believe the Republican Party by and large stands for moral values that white evangelicals, or all evangelicals, stand for or should stand for, and stands with Israel more solidly than Democrats. So for the most part in recent years, most of my voting where I have voted has been for Republicans. But I'm independent. My ultimate allegiance is to Jesus and the kingdom of God. But I was saying how often, as we're sharing the gospel with someone, that they immediately associate that with right-wing American politics. And that's mainly white evangelical, for the most part. So I was talking about that in our white culture and talking about obstacles to overcome and misunderstanding. So same way in the black culture, obstacles to overcome misunderstanding. I just want to encourage you, if you're a white listener, please ask God for his heart. When you look at the satanic attack that has come against black Americans, it's one reason I bring attention to these issues, even though I know they're controversial potentially, because I'm so burdened about it, because it bothers me so much. Now, I haven't devoted my life to fighting against this. You can't devote your life to fight against everything, but it's something that I've devoted time and energy to, and that has grieved me. And that has caused me to bring these things up, because to me, I'm thinking about what God wants to do as well. I'm thinking about the potential of what God wants to do through men and women that come to know him. And look, the fact of the matter is, I'll be candid with you. When I am, let's say, checking in for a flight and the person behind the counter is black, I'm much more inclined to say God bless you or have a blessed day than if the person is white, because there's a higher percentage of churchgoers in the black community. And the gospel is often more acceptable. Same way I'm more inclined to do it to a southerner than to a northerner, for the same reason of church attendance and the gospel being more acceptable. So if I'm biased, I'm biased in a very positive way, in a good way. But that also means I'm all the more burdened. Why is the devil so focused on wiping out black Americans and keeping down black Americans? What is it that they have to offer in the kingdom of God and that America needs? That's what we need to pray and ask God for his heart. Please join with me in getting these quotes out. So my article will go live tonight at 8 o'clock about the architect of the greatest genocide in history. It'll have these horrific quotes from Margaret Sanger against black Americans. And they're out there, but help me get them out more. So when the article's out, if you're on Facebook, you'll be notified by it immediately, or Twitter, you'll be notified immediately. And then you can help send the word out, spread the word. All right. Share it as widely as possible. Also, I don't know how long this will last, but I found out Hyper Grace, 300 plus pages on Kindle, is available for just $2.99 download on Amazon.com and some other sites. So if you haven't gotten it yet, great time to get it. I get many books like this when I find out they're available cheap. This is a fraction of the normal price, over 300 pages. Get the full book, Yours to Keep, in e-form. So if you haven't ordered Hyper Grace yet by Yours Truly, go to Amazon.com and do it while this offer stands. And then visit my website. Watch the video on the Jeremiah commentary. I think you'll be interested in getting it for yourself. That's at Ask Dr. Brown, AskDrBrown.org. While you're there, if you're not connected with me on Facebook and Twitter, just click on the icons to connect. My bottom line today, there is an attack on black Americans because God intends to raise up many to help change the nation.